Something else on my mind was to say a big thank you to all those who worked so hard yesterday for the Church Away Day. Huge numbers getting involved to make it happen, and I thought it happened so well and so lovely to be part of the church family away at Gorsley yesterday. So again, huge thanks for that. Now, as John has already explained, we're on a journey through Luke's Gospel, so if you feel got at tonight, that is God speaking his word into our lives. That isn't the fact that I know something about you ahead of time, all right? This is the way God's word works, and we plan these months ahead, but we trust that he will lead us. And to get us into it, you really need to understand something of the context. This is a sermon Jesus is speaking to people who he has called to be his followers, his disciples. We gather that there are others who are listening in. So in a sense, it's not private teaching. This is open. It's Jesus laying it on the in the public domain, what it will mean to follow him and what the Jesus life will look like. And as we remind ourselves of what Jesus has just been covering in his sermon, if you've got the Bible open in front of you, you'll see there from verse 20 onwards, he has been really talking about the range of attitudes which will show up in the follower of Christ. They're going to work themselves out. To be in Christ and to be of Christ is to have the Christ life living in us. So a family likeness will start to work its way out. And the family resemblance will be seen there. And if you look at verse 36, he's saying, be merciful just as your Father God is merciful. And this is not simply encouraging the Christian follower to follow more rules and regs, with a more godlike attitude. What Jesus is really driving home here is that there needs to be a heart change to every man or woman who follows Christ. And Jesus is the one who will change our hearts. That's the good news. He's not just trying to tease us with something of a high bar to reach. He's actually showing us what will be part of our Christian discipleship. And so in those early verses, our attitude to circumstances, whether they're poverty or hunger or sorrow or rejection. And then the opposites, if we experience riches or if we're well fed or laughter or accepted, actually the proof of the pudding will be whether we are in Jesus or not. That will show up again in how we respond to enemies. Here it said sometimes, oh, never had enemies. But actually, Jesus prods pretty hard here because it's what's going on in the heart. And I came across an example this week which really sort of fits with last week's sermon, but John was preaching that, so I get a chance to give this illustration to show how radical it is. And then I think it's a great springboard into the section for tonight. It was around the events, and many of you remember this all too well, 1989, when the Berlin Wall came down, and that sort of division between East Germany and West Germany was done away with. And the former communist leader in East Germany, Erich Honecker, again, name that will ring bells for some of us from the news of those days, dark days of the Cold War. With the communist government having been toppled, Erich Honecker lost his home, even the Communist Party kicked him out. And with the revolution, Honecker and his wife Margot were homeless and destitute. Real fall from power. And one of the church pastors who was running a refuge center north of Berlin became aware of Erich Honecker's predicament. And this pastor was challenged with his church, that question we keep asking, what would Jesus do? And the pastor recognized it would be wrong to give Erich Honecker and his wife a room in the refuge when there were already people in line, desperately in need as well. And so the pastor and his family took the former dictator into their own home. An amazing example of the Jesus teaching about loving your enemy. And there was graffiti on the walls round about on buildings. No mercy for Honecker, the newspapers reported. But this Jesus follower and his family were living a different kingdom. Jesus was king. And they responded with mercy, like the Father has mercy. My friends, so unnatural, so radical, so supernatural, so like Jesus. And there was another aspect to that story quickly, is that Mrs. Honecker, under the communist regime, had been education minister in East Germany. And her policy had been specifically, explicitly, to discriminate against Christians. And consequently, this pastor and his wife, 8 of their children, had been denied access to education because of their Christian faith. Protestants being treated like a cult. And here was this family welcoming them into the home. That challenges me. Giving their enemy their coat, turning the other cheek, giving them space and a bed. You get the picture. We are to show mercy, just like God the Father has shown mercy to us. But here, not just a new set of rules is in this discipleship teaching. Here now, Jesus focuses on the attitudes to ourselves, to themselves as they listen to this sermon. Jesus is shining a light from verse 37 into their lives, into their hearts, revealing their attitudes. And Jesus is not interested, after all, in the outward appearance of things. He goes to the heart of the matter. Now, we will get to verse 37, I promise you. But you see, one of these things happened on Friday. In fact, it's been happening for a few days where I've been struggling to read. Just the words have been going blurry. And on Friday lunchtime, I proofread that church news sheet. And it just shows what a mess I made of that as well. But it was so blurry. I was with Mark in the office and I read it through. And so I made an appointment for the optician. And they had a cancellation at 3:15. So I went around the corner and had my eyes tested. Now, for a £10 extra, they offered me a photograph of my eyes. So, there you go. All right. And what I didn't realise fully was that they can look into this, these clever people, and tell all sorts of things from the back of the eye. And this retinal photo, as it's called, I gather. They can see the state of the heart, whether I've got diabetes or not. A whole lot of other things which you're not allowed to analyse, all right. But there you go. And in a sense, it's a lovely picture of what Jesus is saying here with a look into the eye and into the heart of the follower of Jesus. And so come with me this evening from verse 37, because this is about what our spiritual health is like. Jesus asking the questions. And let me run through them, because they are explicit, and these things don't come naturally of ourselves. The basic principle that they're all built on is sowing and reaping. And in four respects, are there going to be any signs of judging, any signs of forgiving, any signs of condemning, any signs of giving? And a fifth one, any signs? Let's come to them one at a time. Any signs of judging? You didn't know you could see that through your eye, did you? But here's the point Jesus makes in verse 37. Do not judge and you will not be judged. We understand that it's wrong, it's sinful to hate. Do not hate is another injunction. But I wonder if this registers as sin, as Jesus says it, the sin of judgment. Now, of course, Jesus is not recommending that our critical faculties are suspended and that somehow we're not allowed to have an opinion on anything. Of course, that's not the point here. But it's important I just quickly deal with that. Yesterday on our away day, we had a really helpful question from one of the church family, just asking, you know, in a sense, how should a Christian respond to issues going on round about, whether they're political or economic or the social or employment issues and so on. And as was given in the answer, and I think this is a really good reminder, we're called by God to have an opinion that includes looking at things with God's eye, with justice and mercy, and making good and wise judgments. Now, not just on the social sphere, but also on the personal scale. In verse 39, Jesus calls us to not be blind, but to be able to lead another person. We know from Jesus' teaching that we're not to throw pearls before swine, or to give what's holy to dogs. Now, to do that and to work those things out, we need to have our brains in gear. We're to exercise God-given common sense, and to be able to weigh up matters in a way that's right before God. So, to give an example from Jesus' teaching about the religious hypocrites, which he's really attacking through a lot of his sermons, in Matthew 6, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus there is attacking, he's judging, if you like, those who fast in public, those who pray, making a big deal of their prayer life, and those who give, showing off in their giving. In other words, judgment is necessary, and Jesus is saying to disciples, don't be like them, use your faculties of judging well. But here, what Jesus is driving at is obviously referring to judgmentalism, to use that word. Judgmentalism, which is totally destructive and therefore sinful. A judging attitude, you know, the sort which judges anyone and everything. and has an opinion, a censorious sort of attitude, disapproving of everything going on around. Now, you've got it already, but as I understood that a little bit more, I think what I understood about that was Jesus is attacking here that human trait in many of us, if not all of us, which somehow elevates ourselves above others to sort of look down on others and tell and have an opinion and say what's wrong. Now again, hear me correctly, it's good to have opinions. It just depends what sort of opinions. And Jesus attacks here what is harsh about judgmentalism. Because judgmentalism doesn't always know the facts. Such judgments tend to pick up on failing after failing, so the finger that points. And for such a person, nothing is ever correct or good. And although a person would tend to be oblivious to this sin disease, they're always putting people down, nitpicking, grabbing at situations. And Jesus is targeting this here. Speaking badly about other people was obviously a trait in the New Testament church of the first century. Let me cross-reference it with James, who writes to deal with this very issue. There had been issues, and so he writes in James 4, "Do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against his brother or judges him speaks against the law and judges it." There is only one law and judge, James writes, the one who is able to save and destroy. Who are you to judge your neighbour? I think James's question there is a really good and helpful one. When someone is slagging off another person or a situation, who are you to judge is the challenge Jesus gives here. Oh, says somebody, well, I'm speaking on behalf of 12 others. Well, actually, says James again, James 5 verse 9, don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. I think that's a really helpful perspective, a paradigm in a sense for a church life, just to be reminded of this. Are there any signs of judging? The judge is standing at the door. Now, of course, we need to distill judgments, as I say, and criticism. We need to sometimes work out, actually, is there some truth in what is being brought to us? Because sometimes, thank God for the person who judges. Or is actually the judgment exposing more of that person's human heart? Well, a merciful father has merciful children. And secondly, any signs of forgiving is a question that comes out in verse 37 at the end. Forgive, and in fact, let me just quickly deal with these two. Any signs of forgiving? Forgive and you will be forgiven. Now, we've dealt with this before. I'm not going to hover on it any longer. But thirdly, any signs of condemning? It's linked to the judgmentalism. But I really want to zoom into the giving here, the fourth one. Give and it will be given to you. Give and it will be to you. Not treating God as a slot machine that somehow if we invest in him, he's going to pour back loads of bounty and reward us somehow. Instead, this is an attitude that pervades the disciple of Jesus who hears the teaching of Jesus and opens ourselves up to everything that he wants us to be. And that means being generous. Now, I didn't tell you what the issue of the optician was. I need glasses is the point, all right? So reading glasses. So they're on order. And I'll get over that event of showing you one day in a week's time or 2 weeks' time the glasses going on. But I'm a bit fuzzy here, I have to admit. But I'm trying to say, if you're not getting it here, that giving is meant to be the hallmark of a Christian disciple. Martin Luther said, "I have tried to keep things in my hand and lost them, but what I have given into God's hand I still possess." I think that's brilliant. And as many of us have discovered, we cannot outgive God. And what Jesus is really pumping through here is this exhilarating teaching that as disciples, followers of him, there's going to be a wonderful liberty about our resources and how we hold on to them and how we release them for the kingdom. I wonder in your discipleship training if you've had it as a Christian or a new Christian. Mike and I are working through some things at the minute, and it's right that as new Christians we teach about how to pray and how to read the Bible and how to know more about God. But I wonder, have we had some discipleship teaching about giving in there? Because it's so important and integral to Christian living. And this attitude of generosity, which is the hallmark of God himself again. Now there's a very appealing challenge at the end of verse 38 to do with stewardship. What Jesus is saying, the more you trust God, and use your resources with him, the more he will repay in good measure. Look at this phrase, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. Isn't that brilliant? Trusting God. Disciples who mean business with Jesus will develop the family likeness. And so we will give and give and give. And I just wonder, as I think of that image of the eye and the ophthalmos or whatever it was called, looking inside me to see what was going on inside me. As Jesus looks inside my eye's heart, inside yours, what's he seeing of the generosity of our discipleship? Please understand, because money is a delicate subject these days, as we know as a church. This is not a veiled attempt to try and raise a bit more money, to try and get a salary increase or anything else like that. It's where we're at as we read the words of Jesus. And here it forces the question, how is our personal giving? My friend, I have to ask that question. How are you doing? Are we giving according to our income? Perhaps we're like the widow who just gives. She hardly has a penny or two to give, but gives out of almost what she doesn't have. But Jesus congratulates her, because in contrast with the rich benefactors who are giving lavishly and showing off in it all, actually she's giving more, and she's giving from the heart. Practical issues, and do talk to Peter Young, our church treasurer, who's produced a very helpful sheet on Thursday night for our members meeting. I know it's available to others, which shows you the information you need. It's good to be aware of the numbers, the facts, how we spend money to be part of a church. Are we spending it well? A healthy church shares the conviction that God is no man's debtor. A chance to entrust more into his hands. My mind goes to Malachi chapter 3, the last book of the Old Testament. About the people of God then who were robbing God. And Malachi, as he writes, says, look, the words of God, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room for it. Have you ever seen that as the antidote to your issues? Time and time again in our lives, we're seeing as we come back to know God, we have to just regularly revisit this one. Are we giving as we should? There's a blessing in there. And the final bit I really want to come in on is any signs of good or bad fruit. This inspection into our own eyes, as it were, to what's going on in the heart. And Jesus uses this well-known image of sawdust and planks. And no doubt with a twinkle in his eye as he tells that story and uses that metaphor. Rather like as if I'd gone into the opticians on Friday and sort of been treated by somebody who couldn't see, who was blind. I mean, it would have been a joke, wouldn't it? You get it? I mean, it's we're meant to laugh, but then Jesus says it has the cutting edge serious thing to this. And we know something of this because when we squirm with maybe a fly or a foreign body that gets into our eye, we sense the pain of this image. But what Jesus drives at here is the potential to be blind to our own failures. While we could be experts about anything and everything, what are we really like? And this forces us to stop and do some eye inspection and some heart inspection. Before we judge another person or condemn or even try and lead them, verses 39 to 40, really important. If we're trying to lead someone on, well, are we actually blind? Or are we equipped to lead someone else on in things to do with God and faith? Or are we just going to both fall into the pit? Have we got some eye problems that need sorting first? Well, you get the point. And here, I just make an observation. We have such an ability to grade sin, don't we? Specks of sawdust there. Planks of wood over here. I can justify my sin. Well, it's just small. It's over there. I find faults in others. When I feel bad about something, it's more healing to find something worse in the other person. The point is coming through in all these aspects of the sermon of Jesus. We're simply not good enough or wise enough to judge. So when we recognize a sin problem in someone else, well done. We recognize that because they're a sinner and so are we. And thank God who sees the whole picture as he administers grace into all of this. Now the word Jesus uses in this challenge is the word hypocrite in the middle of verse 42. Have we checked ourselves for being actors? hypocrites? Can we see clearly enough to be leading others? As we have just said and noted from those verses, we can only lead others as far as we've gone ourselves. Otherwise, we will fall into the proverbial ditch that Jesus describes. And yet, by God's grace, as he works in us personally, then we can have that impact in the life of another. Now, a practical challenge here seems to be, as we inspect, whether we are caught up with sawdust issues or details or points out there. What am I trying to say there? Well, isn't it just a human trait that we can sort of get really fixated on issues or people or things? And it's out there. It's like Jesus is saying, well, that's sawdust. Have you checked your own eye? Is there a massive floorboard in there that you're missing? Could it even be that we're missing the whole central thrust of the gospel, the grace of Jesus, the forgiveness of Jesus, the mercy of Jesus in all this? Because we've got so obsessed with an issue or a hobby horse or stuff that isn't just right. Well, Jesus is trying to free us of all of that. And you see where Jesus ends up with the fruit tree picture of verse 43 to 45. Now, we've decided to link this picture with the sermon tonight, but also with next week. So next week you get the fruit tree again linked into the last section of the rock and so on. But I want to end with the fruit picture, because in a sense Jesus is really pushing hard. As you do an examination, I do the examination of ourselves. Good fruit or bad fruit? And the concept is really that one of overflow. What's coming up and out from the heart? What state is the heart in? The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, Jesus says. For out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks. What's going to come out of the heart overflow pipe, I wonder? I had a really bad example of this late one Saturday evening years ago. I was driving my mum back to her home in Swindon, and roads were pretty clear. I was going a normal speed, motorway speed, I hasten to add. And I came off at junction 15 to go to Swindon, and as we got to the top of the roundabout, a car came out of nowhere, and I had to brake suddenly. And out of my mouth came a word, a swear word, that I didn't even know was in there. And my mum is sitting there. It wasn't a good moment of my life. And I was both shocked, because my mum was there, but I was more shocked with myself that there was stuff in my heart that had just come out in a moment's response. It was my personal reminder of personal sinfulness, the instant reaction that my heart needs purifying, stuff that needs to be dealt with, evil things that get stored up in a human heart. And I couldn't pretend it wasn't in me, because it had just come up out of me, out of the overflow of the heart, and it was wrong, and it had to be dealt with. You know, Jesus isn't just into the business of our language, although that will be part of it. He's in the business of changing our hearts, our sinful carnal hearts, our hearts which he describes as evil. We don't like to think of that picture, but he's in the heart transformation business. And the great news of the gospel of Jesus again this evening is that if you are following Jesus Christ, he is in the business of shaping us as we open ourselves up to him. If you're not yet a follower of Jesus Christ and you want to, you're starting to know about Jesus Christ, my friend, he's in the business of coming to people like you. He wants to live in our lives as King and to help us and to change us. I find it very easy to apply this teaching, thinking it's really pertinent to him or to her or to the other. I can even imagine sitting in church tonight thinking, I'm really glad that person's here to hear this tonight. That's how I've thought sometimes in church. But you know, that's not how this sermon is meant to operate. It's personal to each one of us. And the crunch question as I wrap up is, what about me? What about you to ask that question? Where is the evidence of good fruit growing on the trees of our life? Or are we actually just trying to sort of do the right sort of fruit on the trees, but actually there's no link. It's not organic fruit. It's just bad fruit. We're acting. We're hypocrites. And Jesus, in his sermon here again this evening, asks us to not judge, to not condemn, to be a giving people, to be a forgiving people, to have an openness to inspect the heart regularly, to check our spiritual vision so that we can see clearly, to see the Jesus way, that he takes our hearts and he works on them and changes us and shapes us to live his way. I think we need to pray that God would come and help us and do some work on our hearts, even now.